You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
Today on Wings.
In rural communities, you get to know each other, love each other. You know, you see, when you are offering technology or solutions, you are not offering it from a selfish perspective. You are offering it from a humanity perspective because you've lived the realities of the average person in a rural area.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The African Union is a massive organization comprised of all 55 countries of the continent. Barbara Glover works with its development agency as lead investigator of a project titled Advancing Responsible Artificial Intelligence in African Union Member States. Glover is based in South Africa, but she came to Mombasa for a conference in November 2025. Wings Kenya correspondent Diana Wanyonyi interviewed her about her background and her work.
My name is Barbara Glover. I work for the African Union Development Agency. This is the development arm of the African Union, and our role is to support the implementation of priority projects for the African Union. My work revolves around emerging technologies and how they are adopted to address human capital issues in Africa. These include health, education, social development, and our youth development initiatives as well. And so we are looking at how we can utilize emerging technologies like artificial intelligence and robotics, and how we can use it to address major problems on the continent.
When you are growing up, what kind of a child were you?
I grew up as a very curious child. I was the child that would always be trying to understand why something is the way it is. And so I got into trouble a lot, trying to figure out why things work in a certain way from my parents. They got me to understand information technology from a young age, because my dad would tell you, you need to figure out the laptop yourself. The people that design the laptop are human beings just like you. And so it got me to be a very curious person, and it's guided my initiatives around science and technology adoption as well throughout the years.
What were some of the challenges that you went through while you were growing up?
Growing up, I had quite significant health challenges. I had to be out of school a lot of times because I had surgeries that I had to have in order to get better. And so I relied a lot on education via technology, which is why this is a passion of mine, where you don't maybe have access to mainstream educational systems. So you are relying on edutech platforms or platforms that offer you innovation or information, either through reading on the internet or listening to the radio or watching an educational program on TV to have a good understanding of what you may have been missing out from class. And that has shaped my understanding of technology and made me a good advocate for how we can use technology to transform our societies, whether it's a rural child somewhere that may not exactly have the kind of knowledge or educational system that others have, or whether it's a child that may have a disability and may be ostracized from society. So how we can use technology to better the lives of such people.
Did you have any support from your parents?
Yes, my parents were very supportive. They actually pushed me to think I could solve every problem and I could do anything. They made me very excited about growing up. They made me very excited about exploring new things. They made me think there was no boundary. I mean, in Africa, when you're a woman, you already have limitations that stop you from exploring. But they never made me for once feel like you can't do this because you're a woman, or you can't go here because you're a lady. They gave me those opportunities that made me think I could solve any problem, I could do anything, so long as I have the passion for it.
Did you grow up in a rural area or urban area?
So it's a mix. I was born in a rural area. So I experienced rural life. And
how was it?
It was interesting, because I didn't know that there was a better life. So I thought that was the best there was. So whatever the system was, you know, living in a community house where you're sharing bathrooms and toilets, and going to shared community platforms to use the public access tools, it was... To me, that was life until I moved to the city and I realized, oh, so there's actually a bigger life out there. But it shaped my values as a person. In rural communities, you get to know each other, love each other. You know, you see, when you are offering technology or solutions, you're not offering it from a selfish perspective, you're offering it from a humanity perspective, because you've lived the realities of the average person in a rural area. Yeah.
What did you study, and up to now, what are you doing?
Yeah, I have a very mixed portfolio, so it's quite interesting. My expertise, I started off with biological science, because initially I wanted to be a medical doctor. And so my interest was in biological science. But then when I got to the university, my interest changed and I moved into animal science and animal health. So I graduated with a BSc in zoology. Then I did a master's also in veterinary science. I was really interested in the tourism sector and how we are negatively impacting wildlife with our tourism interests. So just trying to understand how tourist centers introduce drugs or things to monkeys and other primates because they feed on our rubbish in the tourism industry and all of that. And so my research for my master's was in that. Then for my PhD, I studied diagnostics. I wanted to look at how we can improve diagnostics for wildlife. What are the tools, the technologies that we can design to use to improve that in those sectors, and how they inform policies as well. So in doing that, I got very interested more and more in technology. And so I got into the African Union based on those expertise to look at how we can get our policymakers to adopt technology. So I moved from research and academia to policymaking because I felt the need for our policymakers to understand the average researcher's experience and how we can inform policy better with scientific findings as well.
Do you think in Africa we have good policies?
I think we have good policies on paper, but we are not implementing them. And there are several reasons why we are not implementing them. One is that everyone is drafting a policy. The other person doesn't know the other one has drafted this policy or that policy. So we're not able to implement it because we are, first of all, not even aware that the policies exist. So all we end up doing is drafting newer and newer policies, not how to implement those policies. And then secondly, some of our policies are donor-driven. So it's not based on our needs as a continent, because maybe the research grant that you saw online says that draft a policy on this and we'll give you money. So they draft the policy, but it's not reflecting the human reality. So then we are not able to implement it because it was donor-driven. It wasn't based on the needs of our continent in itself. And also another thing is the fact that we are always able to define the policies, but we don't define how to be able to meet the goals that we are looking for in the policies. That part is always missing. The follow-up on when the policy is being implemented to ensure that we have a feedback mechanism that ensures that that policy is updated to reflect the realities of people. Mm-hmm. Those are the issues that I have identified with our policymaking.
Barbara Glover is about to name two initiatives. One is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, known as SDGs for short. The other is Agenda 2063, adopted by the African Union upon its 50th anniversary, naming priorities for its next 50 years.
One overarching policy that I would want to speak to is Agenda 2063. Usually when I engage policymakers, they talk about SDGs, which is great. But I think as a continent, we also need to look at domesticated policies, which is one that has the African reality at heart. So Agenda 2063 is our 50-year blueprint of the Africa that we want by the year 2063. It has several aspirations looking at how we can build our Africa through science, technology, innovation, how we can build Africa through peace and security. There are 7 aspirations that speak to all the needs that we have as a continent. And within that, we have goals, what we can do to meet those 7 aspirations that have been agreed on by the heads of state and government. And I believe that if we truly implement all the aspirations of Agenda 2063, we definitely will have the Africa that we want. So, for instance, when it comes to education, we are looking at citizens that are well-educated, that understand the realities of Africa. You know, so sometimes you go to the universities and they have curriculum that have been there from 1920s. They are learning things that do not really have relevance to our continental challenges at present. So we are looking at how we can empower, for instance, our educational sector, so that we have updated curriculum that really addresses the needs of the continent. That will be one. Then we are looking at, say, something like energy, how we can harness our energy resources. The continent is so blessed with so many energy resources, whether it's water, whether it's solar. We have the beauty of having different climates, so that if we are looking at North Africa, they can provide us with solar energy. If you are looking at those in the coast, they can provide us with the water energy. There are those that can give us wind energy. So we have different energy sources that if we truly were harmonizing it, we can solve some of the challenges. We're also looking at peace and security, because nothing moves without peace and security. How do we ensure that as a continent we are able to have peaceful activities in our elections, in our engagement with each other, to address the continent's problems?
You are speaking about other policies too.
Yes, so we have the Science, Technology, Innovation Strategy for Africa. Next year, at the February summit, we are going to launch the implementation plan for that. So this was designed to enable us to meet Agenda 2063 goals using science and technology. So it looks at the 7 aspirations and how science and technology can enable us to meet them. So the first phase was from 2013 to 2024. We had the first 10-year plan for science and technology. And now we are launching the next phase. The heads of state and government adopted it this February at the summit. And we are now launching the implementation plan at next year's summit that would look at, in the next 10 years, what do we really need to do to be able to meet our science, technology, and innovation goals as well. That's also one strategy that I feel, one policy that I feel we should really look at, how we can align our national science, technology, and innovation strategies to this continental initiative to be able to address the challenges that we have. Another policy is data governance framework. One thing we have all realized, which is a sad reality, is the fact that most of our data is taken out of the continent. We are not able to protect our data. Our health system, there are certain countries that even their health data doesn't sit in the country. It's sitting outside the continent. So when the funder decides to get angry, it means they necessarily don't have their health data, which is a sad reality. They say data is money. Data is the new gold. How do we harness data as a continent? And also, how do we share data? You would realize that our African countries easily share data with their European partners, but will not be willing to share with their colleagues from Africa, which is a sad reality. We need to be able to have that data to be able to improve research, to be able to improve policy. And so that data governance framework gives recommendations on how we can harness data more effectively on the continent, protect our data from external abuse, and be able to utilize it to develop the continent as well. Then we have another policy, which is the African Union Continental Strategy on AI. We all know that artificial intelligence is now a huge topic of interest. We are curious about what AI can do. And so within that strategy, it looks at the various sectoral areas of AI and how we can use it to develop the continent. What are the national commitments that are there? What are the existing strategies that are there that we need to look at when we are looking at harnessing AI? And how together it can support us to be able to effectively harness artificial intelligence. You will see, for instance, that in certain economies, let's say the European economies that are far more developed, their AI strategy and policies are a bit more restrictive. And then when you look at certain policies, like in the US, they have a more relaxed, business-focused AI strategy. We need, as Africa, to define what we want to do with AI, what will be our strength, what can we realistically do, and how we can utilize that to support the continent. And that's what this continental strategy supports us to do as well.
You are listening to an interview with Barbara Glover from the African Union's Development Agency. She's the lead investigator for a project titled Advancing Responsible Artificial Intelligence in African Union Member States. Diana Wanyonyi interviewed her for Wings.
Tell us about artificial intelligence and medicine. What is it all about?
Yes. So we are looking at AI from a development perspective, not just as something that is fanciful, that can be used to make life just exciting, that can just generate pictures or nice images or write bold text. We also want to look at AI as a tool to solve our problems on the continent. And we all understand that health is one of our major challenges on the continent. So we are thinking about how can we use artificial intelligence to address continental challenges. For instance, medical or health regulatory agencies, they receive applications for approval of medicines and health products. Certain countries have a backlog of 3-4 years of application that they haven't yet reviewed because they receive more than they can handle as a government agency. So how can we use AI to help them to be able to make their systems more efficient, also do their analysis in a very objective way? AI gives you a balanced perspective on how you can evaluate these medical products. You can look at what other countries have done or other regions have done with evaluating those medical products to help make a good decision. And that's one of the areas that we are looking at. Then also, we are trying to encourage our young innovators to design apps, robots, systems that address our health challenges. We don't want them to just design apps for the sake of it. It should be able to meet a need. For instance, we have this app that we've been supporting called Mama Mate. It helps women in rural areas who may not have regular access to internet.
Mama Mate won an award in the 2025 AI for Good competition as an app offering advice to new mothers. According to Barbara Glover, it is also being tried out to offer prenatal advice in local languages.
Sometimes they don't have access to doctors the way someone in urban centers will have doctors. So they have this nice small tool that they carry with them. It gives them information on if you are feeling this as a pregnant woman, this is what you should do, this is when you should go to the hospital, that they can use to say, oh, I feel like the baby is kicking too much, what should I do? They can put it into the AI system, and it's offline, which is the best thing. Yeah. And then it has an AI component that when the person connects to the internet, it updates the system. And it can give them updates to say, okay, do this or go see the doctor, or maybe this is not something you should worry about, or this is something you should be taking. You know, so it gives them that access as a rural mother to be able to have timely information that would help you so we reduce the maternity mortality cases that we have on the continent. So those are some of the practical things that we are doing with AI and health.
That application is used in which country?
Okay, so the Mama Mate application was just piloted currently mostly in rural Tanzania, but we are looking at Kenya, Tanzania, and I think Uganda. And we gave seed funding that we are using to do the pilots to be able to see how it will work most effectively. So they are piloting it there, and then we are moving to other East African regions as well. Sometimes maybe you want the AI to speak the way that the person in that region would understand or appreciate. So we are customizing based on what will make sense to the pregnant woman in that area. Let's say, for instance, she's wondering what food she should be eating to improve blood. We need to have food that is available to that rural area that will make it more relevant for her.
Is the language also customed? For example, in Tanzania or in Kenya, is the app in Swahili or is it English only?
They do have AI systems in Swahili, but from the Swahili speakers, it's not as effective as it should be. So for AI technologies, we are piloting actively using local languages for AI. We have engaged with some partners that are looking at local languages customization. And they, for instance, indicate that we need to generate more data to help them to be able to build this for AI. That is one next step we are going for. As you know, Swahili is the 5th African Union language. And so we want to ensure that even in development of tools and applications, we use our local languages. Currently, the ones that we have are sort of in pilot testing because the users of the apps usually complain that the language is not as accurate as it should be. And so what we are doing is investing more in getting more of this data around the local languages put into those apps or system so that it becomes more relevant to the users of the language at present. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doctor, can you speak about AI competition?
Sure. I believe that our African youth is our biggest resource, and we need to provide platforms for them. Last year, we worked with Elevate AI and a number of partners, including the Arab Bank for Development, to harness the potential of our young people. So we had the Presidential Youth in AI and Robotics Competition in Tanzania. We had the award by the Prime Minister of Tanzania. We had about 1,300 applications that were received for AI applications in health, in education, in mining, environmental protection. Over 10 categories of submissions were received. And we realized that there was so much appetite from our young innovators to be seen for their innovations and how they are addressing African challenges with AI and robotics to be seen more. This year, the submissions tripled. We had over 3,000 applications received, and the awards were given at the G20 summit in South Africa. We have noticed over the years that the most prominent tools that win the top awards are from health. Understandably, because we are trying to solve the challenges on the continent. So how AI can be used to address cancer survival, how it can be used to digitalize our health records and products, how it can be used to address people with disabilities. So last year, the winning award was from a young man, Pierre, from DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. He designed a system where people who have disabilities can use their brain to control things. I think Elon Musk is starting a startup on something like that. And so it was very exciting to see that this knowledge also existed on our continent. He was able to design that system where someone that had a disability was able to use his brain to control his computer, to move things around in the room. And it was really, really impressive. This year, it was won by a young man from South Africa, where he was looking at the utilization of AI for cancer diagnosis. We realized that some of these systems are very subjective, such that you only do the diagnosis based on the expertise of the lab technician or the one looking at the results. And so we are trying to make this also heavily dependent on international standards, not trying to have any bias in the system as you're looking at the results. So this was the second edition winner for the robotics and AI competition.
What about some of the memorable applications that you went through?
In terms of memorable applications, I look at applications that address rural Africa, just the realities of people in rural Africa, whether it's affording them clean water, whether it's addressing a young child that may not have educational resources. And so my favorite applications fall in that regard. This year, there was a submission from a guy for people who have cerebral palsy, how they can utilize these applications for their day-to-day movement. And that was something that really touched my heart. Last year, there was an application from a young lady to detect diseases in sheep. And I realized that this is something that an average farmer in rural Africa can utilize without having to seek expensive calls from a veterinarian, because they have an application where they can take the picture and try to understand what is it that is impacting my animals, how can I address the challenge that I have with a basic smartphone. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the applications that I have seen that have really touched me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the use of this AI, have they really improved our health in Africa?
So one thing I've noticed is that most of the projects are at infancy stage. And the reason why they're at infancy is because they need a lot of investment. Our competition provides them with starting investment that can help them to build the product to a stage where it can be investable. But then they always cry out for investment. Sadly, we only get external investments most of the time. And so the investment gets taken away and then it's not really applied in Africa. It's taken to another country where the investment is coming from. And so we don't get to see the impact. But I very much believe that if we truly invest in some of these innovations on the continent and we apply it to our systems, we are going to see significant change mm-hmm. on the continent.
Do you think Western countries are doing much better than Africa in terms of innovation in matters of health?
I believe so. I believe that our Western colleagues have a more open-mindedness to adopting innovations. Our systems are a bit concerned, which is understandable. I mean, like, there's this innovation that you introduced and people are concerned about adopting it because of historical issues where they're thinking, is this something that someone is trying to kill us? Is this something that someone is trying to bring an innovation that will cause negative impact? And so they are slow to adapt the innovation compared to our Western world, where they are very much excited. Also, the Western systems provide enough funding to support their innovators to be able to scale up, which is something that I would encourage our African systems, our philanthropists, our billionaires and millionaires on the continent to look at supporting our young people to be able to scale up some of these innovations, because at the end of the day, they address African problems for us, which is something that we really need as a continent. Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's time for African governments, for our governments to embrace these new technologies, AI, in matters of health?
Yes, I believe so. At this ongoing event at SCOMRA, for instance, we have the national regulatory agencies, and they are very keen on this because they know that AI is going to address the backlogs that they have in their regulatory systems, help them to be more efficient and to fast-track their processes more. So they are very much open to this. And it's a matter of getting people to really understand these technologies. Sometimes the pushback is just because they don't understand it. Some feel, this is going to take my job. Why should I push something that's going to take my job? So getting them to understand that this could be a good help to you rather than taking your job, depending on how you define it, and make, you know, taking away the fear would allow people to adopt these technologies more. I've seen countries like China run with this. Now they have children from the basic age compulsory AI and coding lesson right from the basic, and I think it's because they see something in the future, and we should also be thinking about it. How do we get our young people to understand these technologies? How do we get them to start playing with these technologies? Even if it's not everyone that gets access, let's have it in the system so that they know that you have the, you should think about these things. Get them, we shouldn't wait till we get to the point where we have people that are training for a job that may not exist in the next 5 years. It doesn't help the continent. How do we get them to think about new areas, new ideas, new opportunities, and be able to harness them more effectively? I think that that can be very well addressed with curriculum reforms that incorporate AI and robotics into our education systems at the basic level.
As much as we're embracing this AI technologies in health system, it's a bit also expensive for local people who are not able to afford to get the services.
That's very true. But I'll give you a good example of M-Pesa and how we use it for money transfer. The average rural person uses M-Pesa. But it's a technology, right? It's been adopted in such a way that it's become utilized by any and everybody. So how do we make the, instead of, we don't have to have complex AI system like robots walking about us, but how do we integrate into the basic day-to-day living of everybody else? So in the health system, it may be that not everybody would have that complex x-ray or whatever it is, but how can the average health worker in a hospital have access to a tool that enables him or her to be able to diagnose more effectively when people come to the hospital, or to be able to look at maybe in June, these diseases are higher every year. So in June, you know that more nurses should be moved to this place because diseases are higher. You know, how do we utilize them to improve our services without really looking at complex apps or applications that Africa may not be ready to absorb?
Parting shots.
I am a very much big believer in brightening your corner where you are. Having worked in international development over the last 10 years, I've noticed that people get overwhelmed with the problems of Africa and then choose not to do anything at all. But I believe that if you, in one small way, you as a journalist, spotlighting what is happening on the continent, you've done so much. You've opened up people's eyes to see that this is what is happening. And so if there were so many of people like you that were projecting African voices, projecting what it is that we are doing in the various spaces, we are gradually building the Africa that we want. So in whatever way, whether you're a teacher in a rural village, whether you're a farmer, whatever it is that you're doing, brighten your corner where you are. When we have bright spots, little spots all over the continent, we'll be able to address the challenges we have as a continent.
Barbara Glover is a South African who works with the African Union Development Agency as lead investigator of a project titled Advancing Responsible Artificial Intelligence in African Union Member States. Our Kenya reporter Diana Wanyonyi interviewed her for Wings. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughan, whose books include Women and the Gift Economy and The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. Her series of salons featuring women activists and scholars can be viewed online at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Bernabeu.